I won't make you take one if you don't make me, my lady. Julia laughed. You don't need a nap, Michael, but Charlie, Chester, Jimmy and James do.
I'm not tired, my lady, James said.
Me either, Charlie said, his eyelids drooping. Nevertheless, a little rest is just the thing. She bundled the four boys together and pushed them toward the stairs. Lady Juliana, Raxel said from behind her, you are taking a third of my workforce. Well, perhaps now is a good time for all of you to rest. These are boys, sir, not soldiers. They should have some time for recreation. She glanced down from the steps and saw him frowning at her. Before he could argue, the first clap of thunder sounded and a steady rain drummed on the roof. It was the sort of day she'd always loved when she'd lived in Mayfair. It was less comforting here.
"Robbie, you and Billy get the buckets. Walter, will you and Michael get the pots and pans? Ralph, go and cover Matthew, Mark and Luke's enclosure. You know the rain makes them nervous. Best they feel snug and secure, so we don't have to spend the rest of the afternoon searching for them."
There was a chorus of, "Yes, my lady," and then she shuttled the little boys upstairs again. Raxel was right behind her.
"What the devil is this?" he asked.
"Sir, what's your language around the children?"
The little boys giggled as she herded them into their room and pulled the curtains closed. The room was already dark, but this made it feel cozier.
"Off with your shoes, boys, then climb under the covers."
Raxel stood in the doorway.
"What the deuce is this?"
"Nap time," she answered.
"No, I meant with the buckets and pots and pans."
"That's to catch the water,"
Jimmy told him, hopping into bed.
"Don't forget our bucket, my lady."
"I won't." She tugged it from the corner and placed it between Chester and James's beds, where water had already begun to leak from the roof.
"Do you mean to tell me the roof leaks?" Raxel asked.
"I hadn't intended to tell you at all, but I suppose it's quite apparent now. We have plenty of buckets to deal with the leaks."
"If we use the pots and pans too," James said, "but that doesn't work so well when it's dinner time."
"Shh." Julia placed a kiss on James's forehead, then went to Jimmy and Charlie. Chester was taking his time.
"Chester, nap time."
"I'm not tired," he yawned. "That wasn't a yawn. I was stretching my mouth."
"You don't have to sleep," Julia told him, pulling back the blanket on his bed. "Just rest. I will come and get you up in an hour."
"Major doesn't need to rest."
Julia glanced at Raxel. Now was the time for him to either help her cause or hurt it. If he hurt it, she would be plagued by tired, cranky boys all evening.
"Actually," Raxel said, "I think Lady Juliana makes a good suggestion. We should all rest, and when you wake, we'll be refreshed and ready to begin anew."
"So you won't work on the steps without us?"
Chester asked. Clearly Raxel hadn't anticipated having to make that sort of promise. Julia raised her brows. He sighed.
"No, we will wait until nap time is through. You'll miss nothing."
"Promise?"
Charlie asked sleepily.
"I do."
"My parents promised to come back for me," Jimmy said, "but they still haven't."
Julia sighed. Her heart broke for Jimmy, who couldn't possibly understand that his parents either could not come for him or did not have the money to support him if they did. These poor children had learned not to trust adults. She'd been steadily earning their trust, and they hadn't chosen to test her now. They'd chosen Mr. Raxel. She looked at the Major, not certain whether to interrupt or let him answer. For a long moment he stood uncertainly in the doorway. Then he strode into the room and went to Jimmy's bed, sitting on the side.
"When I make a promise, I keep it. No work will be done on the house while you rest. I'm certain your parents will keep their promise too. They are in a difficult situation. Give them time, and they will come for you."
He brushed the boy's dark hair back from his forehead.
"Sleep now."
He looked at the other three boys.
"That's an order."
"Yes, sir," they said in unison, though Charlie's reply was garbled as his thumb was already in his mouth.
Julia stepped outside and closed the door when Raxel followed her.
"Thank you," she said. "I know you meant what you said,
and it's so important to the children that they have adults in their life they can count on. He had moved away from the room and closer to her bedchamber, though the little ones could likely not hear. She had lowered her voice as she followed him.
I agree. That's why I'm surprised you haven't done more to show them they can count on you.
Julia glared at him. What precisely do you mean by that, sir?
I mean that you have them living in a place where they aren't safe. What will you tell them when someone breaks in and hurts one of them or you?
I don't have to worry about that anymore. You have fixed the locks.
His light eyes bored into her. Then what will you tell them when the roof collapses on their heads?
I've asked the board of directors for more funds and instructed Mr. Goring to begin work on it.
The same Mr. Goring who sits at Slag's alehouse all day?
Oh, yes, she'd forgotten she would have to let the servant go.
I'll hire another manservant, then.
And how will you be certain he isn't also in Slag's pocket? That man wants you. You won't be safe until he's dealt with.
Yes, well, I'm certain half the residents of Spitalfields wish he would be, as you say, dealt with. But so far, we are not so lucky.
She took a deep breath and squared her shoulders. In any case, it is not your concern. We had an agreement. You would leave at the end of the day. I expect you to keep your word to me.
He gave her a long look. You know I can't do that. There's the ball tonight. She blew out a breath.
I am no child who needs your supervision, Mr. Axel, nor do I need my father's lackey to serve as a nurse.
I am not your father's lackey. I don't stay for money.
Well, you aren't staying out of the goodness of your heart. She paused, almost hoping he would contradict her. But he didn't.
No, as I told you before, I don't have a weak spot for orphans, but I do have my...
Orders, she said before he could. Is that all you care about? Orders?
No, he said quietly. I have found at least one more item to care about lately.
And to her complete shock, he reached up and ran a finger down her cheek. His touch was light and fleeting, but it seemed to burn a path into her delicate skin. She stood rooted in place, all but paralyzed by his touch, but instead of touching her again, he gave her a nod and moved away and then down the steps. Slowly, Julia raised a hand to her cheek. Why had he touched her so intimately? Did he mean to imply he cared about her? They hardly knew each other. The thought had made her cheeks heat and her heart thud heavily in her chest. For a moment, she wondered what his lips might feel like on her cheek. She closed her eyes, imagining the light touch of his lips and the rasp of his dark stubble, and then a cold drop landed on her arm. Julia glanced up and saw a new leak had begun outside her door. With a sigh, she entered the room and collected a vase to catch the water. The activity helped clear her brain, and she was thankful for the interruption of her daydream. He'd almost fooled her. Julia had always wondered how Harriet could have been taken in by such a lying, cheating rogue as the man she'd married, but now she had first-hand experience. Men could be charming to have their way. Raxel had all but made her forget he was only here to report back to her father what a disaster she'd made of running the orphanage. Soon he'd try to persuade her to leave. He was not her ally. He was not here to help her or the boys. Julia simply had to bide her time until he proved it.
8. The deluge of the afternoon had given way to a light sprinkle, and Neil stood in Lady Juliana's parlour, watching the rivulets of water run down the window. He'd sent for his evening clothes, and now wore the dark coat and breeches required for a ball. His silk waistcoat was dark blue, and Neil supposed that was to add colour to his otherwise sombre appearance. The last thing he wanted to do tonight was attend a ball. Ordering boys around all day was far more taxing than ordering soldiers about. Neil had never known children had so much energy. They didn't ever tire of bouncing up and down or asking questions. Thank God they had gone up to bed. A scream shattered his quiet, and he raced into the vestibule to find Lady Juliana brandishing a fan. The boys clambered down the stairs in various states of undress, presumably to protect her.
"Who are you?"
she demanded of the tall, platinum-haired man standing just inside the doorway. Instead of speaking, the man cut his gaze to Neil.
"Protector," Neil said. "Good to know you haven't forgotten how to make an entrance."
Ewan scowled. He was muscular and broad-shouldered and more than a little intimidating.
"Good to know you haven't forgotten how to give orders."
His voice was low and his speech slow, giving weight to each of his words.
"I'm here. Who do you need me to kill?"
Lady Juliana gasped and jumped in front of the boys, shielding them from the perceived harm. Neil held up a hand.
"He's not serious."
At least Neil didn't think Ewan was serious. "Lady Juliana, may I present Mr. Ewan Mostyn?" Her wary brown eyes cut to Ewan, then to him.
"Mostyn is a friend of mine. I trust him with my life, and so I thought it only reasonable that I might trust him with the lives of the children while we are out."
"What?"
Juliana and Ewan said together. Lady Juliana recovered first.
"You cannot possibly expect me to leave the children alone with him. No offence, Mr. Mostyn. You simply do not look like a nursemaid."
Ewan waved away her apology.
"My job is to kill people. If you need a nursemaid, call Rafe."
Juliana's eyes grew wide, and Neil yanked Ewan out of the vestibule and into the privacy of the corridor. Rather, Ewan allowed Neil to lead him. If Ewan didn't want to be moved, nothing and no one would budge him.
"Stop talking about murdering someone. You are scaring the lady."
Ewan flashed a quick grin. The arse was having fun with his role as brute.
"I'm no nursemaid."
"Of course not. The boys will be in bed shortly. I need you to protect the orphanage from anyone attempting to break in." Ewan lifted a brow.
"Yes, I know. People usually try to get out of orphanages. But there's a crime lord who has recently taken an interest in the lady. All you have to do is sit here and keep watch."
Ewan narrowed his eyes.
"What if the boys get out of bed?"
Neil shook his head.
"Order them back to bed." He paused. "In a nice way. You don't want them to start crying."
Ewan's expression turned fearful.
"They cry?"
"No, they don't cry. Lady Juliana and I will return in a few hours."
He clapped a hand on Ewan's shoulder.
"I need you, Protector."
"If there's crying, there will be hell to pay."
"Understood."
Neil led Ewan back to the vestibule, where Lady Juliana still stood in front of the boys.
"Has your father's carriage arrived yet?"
"You cannot possibly think to leave." "I have my orders. Mr. Mostyn has his. The boys will be fine." He pointed to the lads on the stairs.
"Go back to bed. Mr. Mostyn will watch over the orphanage until we return."
"What if he murders us in our sleep?"
James asked in his high voice. "Mr. Mostyn wouldn't murder you. He would never commit murder. Right, Mostyn?" Ewan just stared at him. Neil stared back. Finally, Ewan nodded.
"Right."
Juliana furrowed her brow.
"That wasn't very convincing."
Neil took her arm. "The sooner we leave, the sooner we return home." He all but dragged her away from the children. Finally, at the door, she turned back.
"Go to bed, boys. I'll kiss you goodnight when I return home."
"Ugh!" That from some of the older boys. Neil heard the distinct sound of sniffling from a few of the younger boys. Ewan threw him a panicked look, and Neil pushed Lady Juliana out the door. It wasn't until they'd arrived at Viscount Stirling's ball that Neil had a chance to look at Lady Juliana, really look at her. And then he wished she'd stayed in the darkness of the carriage. In the glittering lights of the Stirling's foyer, her rose-coloured gown seemed to shimmer. The designs at the hem and the bodice were simple and wrought in silver thread that matched the silver combs in her hair. Pink as it was, the gown should have made her look young and innocent, but the way her breasts pushed at the bodice and the slight cling of the fabric to her rounded derriere did not bring to mind debutantes and prim misses. Perhaps if she hadn't had that furry hair swept up and caught by the combs, he might have been able to look away.
but all he could think of was freeing the fire and pressing his lips to the smooth, exposed skin of her back while the coppery tresses brushed against his face. He wasn't the only man who noticed her either. As they moved through the foyer and up the stairs to the ballroom, Neil noted men's heads turning. If Lady Juliana noticed, she gave no indication. In fact, her eyes were slightly unfocused, as though she were deep in thought.
"Is your father here already?" he asked her.
"Pardon? Oh, Papa. Yes, I am certain he came early and then sent the carriage for me. He would have wanted to discuss politics with Sterling."
They paused to allow the couple in front of them to be announced.
"I hope the boys are in bed asleep," she said.
So that was what occupied her mind.
"I'm certain they are. I kept them busy today, and I imagine they are more fatigued than usual."
"And your friend is completely trustworthy."
"As I said, I trust him with my life."
They moved forward, and Neil handed both of their cards to the butler.
"Lady Juliana St. Maur and Mr. Neil Wraxall."
Neil felt his cheeks heat. He hated having all eyes on him like this, especially the eyes of the ton, men and women who thought they were above him simply because of an accident of birth. He never felt more like a bastard than at moments like these. Lady Juliana, on the other hand, glided into the room as though she had been born to do this. And, of course, she had. But what surprised Neil was the ease with which she transitioned from the orphanage to the ballroom. Was there anywhere she felt out of place? A few minutes later, he had the answer. St. Maur intercepted them as they made a circuit of the ballroom.
"Step outside with me, darling," he said, taking his daughter's arm. "You too, Wraxall."
Neil followed the man. He was only an inch or two taller than his daughter, but walked with a regal bearing. At one time, he'd had bright red hair, but most of it had faded to white. His green eyes were still sharp and alert, and as soon as they were outside, he turned them on his daughter.
"What is this nonsense I hear about not coming home?"
Before Juliana could answer, he pointed to Neil.
"And you? Your father said you would have her home within the hour. It has been much longer than an hour, sir."
"Yes, my lord." Neil stood straight. St. Maur was right to chastise him. He had failed in the mission.
"Papa, I'm hardly a child to be called home on your whim. The orphans need me."
"Well, they shall have to get on without you. I let you play at this game because I know how devastated you were at your sister's death."
His voice softened, and Neil caught a glimpse of the man who had indulged his daughter.
"But the time for all that is over."
Lady Juliana raised her chin.
"We had an agreement, Papa. I attend events during the season, and you leave me alone to do my work at Sunnybrook."
"I want to change our agreement. It's past time you married. If something were to happen to me, you would be all alone in the world."
"I'd rather be all alone than stuck with a husband."
She said the last word as though it were a curse.
"As I told you before, I will never marry."
"Yes, you will. Not all men are like Lanesborough."
Her gaze bored into her father.
"No, some are like you."
"Excuse me, but I see a friend of mine," Neil began, thinking now would be a very good time to escape this family feud.
"Mr. Wraxall, won't you dance with me?"
Lady Juliana said suddenly, turning to face him. "I don't," but she took his arm and steered him to the end of a line of dancers.
"I will see you at the Darlington Musicale," her father called over them.
On the dance floor, Neil panicked. He would rather face a line of French infantry than this line of dancers. He knew the steps well enough to avoid making a complete fool of himself, but that did not mean everyone would not discuss him. He had heard it all over the years. "Just like his tart of a mother. He conducts himself well, for a bastard. Has his father no shame, flaunting his by blows in public?" Neil avoided the ton and their social events religiously. Even after he'd returned from the war a hero and everyone wanted to throw fetes in his honour, he declined. As far as Neil was concerned, Rafe could represent them all. But here he was, in full view of his critics, about to dance with one of the most beautiful ladies in the peerage. The two lines of dancers came together, and Lady Juliana pressed her hand to his and circled.
"Why are you scowling?" she murmured. "You were supposed to be having fun."
"Why are you scowling?" he shot back. "Aren't you having fun?"
"No, I'd rather be back at Sunnybrook, but I can't leave until I've danced at least 2 sets. That is my father's rule, although it seems the rules are changing. Where would you rather be?"
They parted, and Neil danced with a blushing blonde girl. Then he was beside Juliana again.
"A pit of vipers? A French dungeon?"
"You hate it that much?"
"I'm a bastard. We are not supposed to show our faces in polite society."
They parted again, and Lady Juliana stared at him intently across the path for the dancers. Then it was their turn to promenade.
"I suppose you expect me to apologize."
"You are not that predictable, Lady Juliana."
"Good, because I will not apologize. You are every inch the man any legitimate son is, and you have nothing to be ashamed of. I am glad I asked you to dance."
"That makes one of us."
"We can show everyone what a gentleman you are."
"I think all we will do is give everyone a new topic for gossip. The set is ending, my lady."
He bowed and kissed her gloved hand.
"We must take a turn about the room."
"Forgive me if I do not take part in that spectacle."
"I will not."
She linked her arm with his, and he was forced either to make a scene or promenade her about the ballroom. As much as he hated the attention he garnered and the false smiles and too slight bows of the nobility, he could not pretend he did not like having her beside him. She smelled of fresh roses, and when the crowd swelled, she was pushed against him, giving him the impression of lush curves and round softness.
"My lady,"
a young man stepped before them. To Neil he looked barely out of the schoolroom.
"May I have the next dance?"
"No,"
Neil said at the same time Juliana said,
"Yes."
She glared at Neil, then looked back at the boy.
"Lord Peter, have you met Mr. Raxel?"
Peter bowed.
"An honour, Mr. Raxel. I studied your accomplishments on the continent at university. You are a true hero."
"Thank you,"
Neil said, feeling like an old man.
"He is a hero," Lady Juliana said, "in so many ways."
Her dark eyes met his, then she looked back at the boy lord.
"Shall we, my lord?"
Lord Peter bowed again and took Lady Juliana's arm, leading her back to the dancing. Neil wished he were on the battlefield. He would have shown Lord Peter a thing or two.
"Didn't expect to see you here."
Neil turned to see Rafe sipping a glass of champagne. He raised it to Neil.
"To what do we owe this honour?"
"To the fact that my latest mission is proving more difficult than I expected."
"Ah, yes, the Lady Juliana. Since our conversation in the billiards room, I have done a bit of investigating."
"Why?"
Neil drawled, watching Juliana laugh and twirl with Lord Peter. Where had Rafe acquired that champagne? Neil needed a bucket.
"Because I am curious by nature.
Aren't you the least curious as to what society says of Lady Juliana?"
"No."
It was a lie, but he knew Rafe would tell him anyway.
"She is stubborn and willful, but those qualities can be forgiven because she is so generous and kind-hearted. Some say too kind-hearted. It is difficult for her to see the bad in anyone. That is a boon for you, is it not?"
Neil cut Rafe a look.
"Isn't there some chit looking to toss her skirts up for you?"
"Definitely, but this is vastly more entertaining. I have never seen you jealous."
Neil stiffened.
"I am not jealous." "Then why are your hands balled into fists, and why are you glaring at the Duke of Preston's youngest son like you want to sever his head from his body?"
Neil forced his fists to open. It did not matter to him who Lady Juliana danced with. In a day or so, she would be home and he could forget about her. She was not even his responsibility at the moment. Her father was here. Let him deal with his daughter.
"I need a drink," Neil said.
"Words I long to hear. This way, old boy.
and Rafe led him toward the card room, where women were in short supply, and the brandy was overflowing. Julia exited the ladies' retiring room, where she had hidden to escape Lord Peter, and moved stealthily toward the ballroom. She had danced her two sets and wanted to return to Sunnybrook before the terrifying Mr. Mostyn ate the children for a midnight snack. She peered through a crack in the door but didn't spot Mr. Wraxall. And she did not think he would be difficult to spot. In his evening clothes, he had looked even more handsome than usual, a feat she had not thought possible. The black of his coat made his hair look even darker, and the blue of his waistcoat gave his eyes even more depth. He'd secured his hair in a short queue, leaving his cheeks exposed. The chiseled planes were square and strong. If there was a more beautiful specimen of masculinity, she had not found it. So where had he disappeared to? She was tempted to leave without him, but she did not relish the lecture he would probably give her later. She shifted slightly to view the room at another angle, and collided with a large shape. She stepped back and stared into the smiling face of Mr. Slag. "What?" she began, then stopped as she saw all too clearly how he had managed to gain entry to the ball. He was dressed in Viscount Stirling's livery, and had probably entered unnoticed by either the guests or staff, as the Viscount had certainly hired additional servants for the evening. "Lady Juliana, so good to see you." He took her hand and kissed it. Julia was relieved she wore gloves, so she did not have to feel his lips on her skin. "Mr. Slag, forgive me if I am surprised by your appearance here."
"You thought with that watchdog in your bed you were safe from me," Slag's lips thinned. "But you won't get away so easily."
He might have been smiling, but she could see the flush of colour in his cheeks. He was angry. Gone was the pleasant man from her parlour. The man before her was the crime lord, and he was not pleased. Julia took another step back. Just a few feet away, hundreds of people danced and chatted, and any moment a lady would pass this way to visit the retiring room, or a servant would happen by. All she need do was scream, and she could be rid of Slag, for the moment.
"If you scream now," he murmured as a lady passed them, "I will give you a real reason to scream later."
Julia swallowed the bile in her throat.
"How about a knife in the belly for that little boy who always has his dirty thumb in his mouth? Or maybe a good beating for the tall one with the freckles?
Charlie and Robbie." Slag was threatening them.
"What do you want?" she asked, her voice steely. "An answer to my proposal, my lady. Nothing more. Well, that and the head of your soldier on a pike. But all things in time."
"I don't have the money," she said.
"Then I'll join you in bed tonight. Get rid of your soldiers or face the consequences."
He started away.
"Wait!"
Julia cried, running after him. A lady returning to the ballroom gave her a disapproving glare. Julia ignored her.
"Mr. Slag!" he turned. "I will get you the money."
"Tonight?"
"No. I need more time."
"At the Darlington Musicale. I know you will be there. That's your last chance."
He moved closer, his breath on her cheek smelling of stale onions.
"Do not cross me, or the little one's blood is on your hands."
He walked away, disappearing through a servant's door that opened out of a panel in the wall. Julia stood rooted in place, her hands shaking and her knees wobbling.
"Juliana, is that you?"
Of course her father would find her now. She pressed her lips together, forced a smile, and turned.
"Yes, Papa."
"Are you well?"
"Just a little tired. I hoped Mr. Wraxall could take me home."
"Home?"
Her father's eyes lit with hope, and Julia felt like the worst villain extinguishing it.
"I meant the orphanage."
"Ah." Her father's face fell. "Won't you ever come home, Julia? I worry for your safety."
Not he missed her, not he cared for her. He worried for her safety. He was far too busy with his own pursuits to waste time on love or affection. Of course, he was right to worry for her safety when one of the most dangerous crime lords in the city had threatened her. But what was she to do? Slag wanted a fortune. Her father did not have it. She'd managed his household for years, and most of his money was tied up in land and repairs to his various properties. If she told him she needed money, he would only force her to return home, and then who would protect the children?
"I cannot come home right now, Papa. The children need me.
And anyway," she said with what she hoped was a bright smile, "Mr. Axel is making certain we are safe and secure. Have you seen him?"
"He is in the card room. I will fetch him for you. You will be at the Darlington Musicale."
"Of course," she said. What other choice did she have? In the carriage, Raxel watched her. Julia stared out the window, but she could feel his gaze on her. She wanted to ignore it, but she had shouldered the weight of Slag's threats on her own long enough. She needed help, and Raxel was all she had.
"I have a problem," she said, glancing at him.
"Just one."
She glared at him. "If all you want to do is mock me..." He crossed to sit beside her, which made her all the more aware of his solid form and the delicious scent of him.
"I apologize.
What is troubling you?"
"I saw Mr. Slag at the ball." Raxel showed no reaction.
"Go on."
"He was dressed as a servant, and he made certain threats."
"What does he want?"
£1,000.
"I see. Have you asked your father for it?"
She blew out a breath.
"He doesn't have it."
"And even if he did, he would lock you up rather than give it to you."
She turned to him, her knees colliding with his.
"Yes. And then what would happen to the boys?"
"What will Slag do if you do not give him the blunt, or is there another way to pay him?"
She looked up and into his eyes. The carriage was dark, but the lamps showed her enough. Raxel knew Slag had given her another option.
"How do you know?"
"One look at you, and how could I not know?" "He wants you in his bed."
She nodded, feeling her cheeks heat.
"I have to give him the money at the musicale, or he will..."
She gestured vaguely. Raxel caught her arm.
"He will never touch you, Lady Juliana. Never."
He pulled her closer so she was almost flush with his chest.
"Do you hear me?"
"Yes."
Her voice sounded faint, and her breath came in quick snatches. Raxel's breath had quickened as well. Her gaze lowered to his lips, and she wondered what it would be like if he touched her, if he kissed her. The carriage stopped, and she lurched against him. Raxel caught her, his touch on her lingering, and then, quite suddenly, he released her and, opening the door, leaped down. Julia took a shaky breath and gave him her hand as she descended. The rain had begun again, and she hurried toward the orphanage door. The coachman gave Raxel an umbrella, and he used it to shield her from the worst of it. A moment later, they stepped into the dark vestibule. It was empty. Julia looked about. Everything seemed in order.
"Where is Mr. Mostyn?" she asked, removing her cloak.
She looked everywhere but Raxel's face, not wanting the feelings she'd had in the carriage to rush back at her.
"Stay here," Raxel ordered.
He moved toward the dining room and parlour, and she followed. With a scowl, he looked over his shoulder.
"I said stay."
"I'm not a dog."
"A dog would have more sense." "If you wake this child, I will break both of your necks," came a low rumble from the parlour.
Julia grabbed Raxel's arm, but he just grinned.
"It's Mostyn."
Julia was not so relieved. She stayed close, following Raxel into the parlour. There, on her couch, sat the big brute of a man, Charlie curled up in his lap. Julia blinked, not certain whether she should believe her eyes.
"Ewan, this is a side of you I had not seen," Raxel said.
The blonde man narrowed his eyes.
"He said he needed a hug to fall asleep."
Mostyn's voice was as hard as rock.
"He looked like he might cry. I did what was necessary under the circumstances."
Julia had to bite her lip to keep from smiling. Mr. Mostyn was not so bad after all. Surely he could have put Charlie to bed after the boy had fallen asleep. She was willing to wager he had not minded hugging the boy as much as he pretended.
"You're a good man, Protector," Raxel said. "A fine soldier."
"Can someone take this child now?" Mostyn looked down at Charlie pointedly. Julia stepped forward and gathered the boy in her arms.
"I will put him to bed. Good night, Mr. Mostyn."
"Thank you."
He made a rough noise, and she left the men to themselves as she carried the warm bundle to his bed. 9. Julia usually slept like a cat snuggled beside the fire when it rained. She didn't understand why people said, "slept like a baby," as little Davy had shown her that babies were not good sleepers by any stretch of the imagination. They awoke at all hours and slept only in short bursts. Still, she wouldn't have traded her time with Davy for all the sleep in the world. If she could only see him once more, she would have consented to a lifetime of restless sleep. But as the devil hadn't yet approached her with that offer, she usually slept well. Charlie or the younger boys sometimes woke her when they had nightmares, but no one had called out tonight. Everyone slept peacefully while the rain tapped a lulling beat against the roof and windows. So why was she lying awake, eyes wide open, in her bed? "Raxel," she muttered. This was his fault. She couldn't sleep because she kept thinking of the way he touched her in the carriage. She kept imagining him kissing her. Had he stayed at the orphanage tonight or gone home? He wouldn't have left her alone after Slag's threats, would he? Perhaps she would tiptoe down and check. Julia talked herself out of leaving her room and her warm bed, and then talked herself back into it again, before finally tossing off her counterpane, pulling on her robe and slippers, and cracking her door open. She held a candle with one hand, and kept her hand on the latch with the other. The corridor was dark and deserted. What had she expected? Raxel prowling outside her room, or that of the boys? A small voice inside her had warned her to go back to sleep. If she did find Raxel, he would only want to discuss Slag's ultimatum more, and she didn't have any answers or solutions. She could not go home, and she could not stay here. Perhaps she should be certain Raxel was still here. She did have a responsibility to keep the boys safe from Slag. Pulling the door open farther, she stepped into the corridor and shone the light on the pail outside her room. It was only about a quarter full of water, which meant someone had emptied it recently. The older boys usually took turns checking the pails, pots and pans when it rained, but she hadn't reminded them tonight. Had they done it of their own volition, or had Raxel ordered them to empty the water buckets? Perhaps he had done them all himself, which meant he'd been right outside her room recently. And why should that thought make her belly jump and flutter? Seeking Raxel out was a bad idea. The way he'd looked at her in the carriage, the way her breath caught when he came around a corner, the way her heart melted when she saw him showing one of the boys how to use a tool or make a repair. These were all warning signs that she should keep her distance. She, of all women, knew what villainy men were capable of. Why would she open herself to more pain than she'd already endured? Because she was a fool, just as Harriet had been. Julia held the candle with one hand and her robe with the other as she descended the back stairs that led to the kitchen. But she was an even bigger fool than Harriet, because Julia knew the dangers awaiting her, while Harriet had not. The kitchen was empty, as expected, and Julia moved silently into the main wing of the building, passing the dining room and parlour doors. When she reached the entryway, it was empty. Mr. Raxel was not keeping vigil over the front door. She turned in a circle, making certain to search the dark corners. Perhaps he had returned home after all. What should she do? What if Slag was outside right now? Had Raxel fixed all the door and window locks? She would check on the children. She would make sure all of them were safe in their beds, and then she would find a large, blunt object and keep watch herself. She was about to ascend the main stairway when it occurred to her that when she'd passed the parlour, a faint light had spilled from the doorway. Wouldn't he have banked the fire before leaving? The fire shouldn't have still burned unless... Julia tiptoed back the way she'd come, pausing right before the doorway of the parlour.
"Please not slag," she prayed. "Please."
She leaned forward, inching closer to the open seam. She could almost see inside. The fire was still burning.
"Come in, Lady Juliana."
Julia jumped and almost dropped the candle she held. She fumbled, barely catching it, but managing to blow it out so at least if it fell, it would not catch the rug on fire. Her heart raced, but not from fear. That had not been Slag's voice. She took her time righting the candle, and when she had secured it again and then again, she swallowed and looked up and into the parlour. In the firelight, she could make out the outline of the man seated in a chair before the fire, his legs outstretched in front of him, his coat, waistcoat, and neckcloth removed.
"No, thank you," she said hastily. "I thought I heard a noise and came to check all was as it should be."
"You heard nothing of the sort. All has been quiet as a graveyard. You came looking for me."
She stood in the doorway, wishing he hadn't chosen to sit before the fire. She couldn't see his expression.
"Not at all. Why would I look for you?"
"You tell me."
But he must have already known. She should return to bed. She should definitely not continue with this conversation. But then she said,
"Very well. I wondered if you had gone home."
"You are not so fortunate."
Julia stepped into the room and saw that not only had he removed his coat, but he'd also rolled his sleeves to the elbow. His face was such a lovely, sun-kissed shade of bronze, and as the firelight played off the bronze skin of his arms, she wondered if the rest of him was that colour as well. And that was a thought better not explored further.
"Won't you try and sleep?" she asked.
He looked tired, his face drawn and his eyes heavy-lidded.
"No. The pails should be emptied about once an hour."
"The older boys can take turns doing that. All of us except the little ones have taken a turn in the past. If we all take 1 hour, no one is disturbed more than once."
Raxel shook his head. "The boys worked hard today. They need their sleep. As do you."
Julia moved closer to him.
"You worked equally hard, and you did not sleep last night."
"Leave it be, my lady,"
he said, his tone one of warning. As if to emphasize his point, he pulled his legs in and sat forward.
"Perhaps I should keep you company. How am I to sleep when you sit up and keep watch?"
He blew out a breath and raked his hands through his hair, pausing to hold his head in his hands and shake it.
"Why can't you be one of those biddable females? Why don't you do as you're told, or better yet, stay in your room?"
He looked up at her.
"You shouldn't be in here with me, alone, and in only your nightclothes. Aren't you concerned about propriety and your reputation, and all the other rot you females hold so high?"
"Why can't you be one of those charming gentlemen who allows a lady to help him so she can return to her room and observe propriety?"
"Because I'm not."
He stood and stalked toward her.
"I'm a soldier, and I'll always be a soldier. I don't need help or company. I will do my duty until you come to your senses and return home."
But he knew as well as she that she could not return home. Perhaps he felt the same anguish she did, the same tearing of loyalties. He loomed over her, and though she refused to step back and show her trepidation, she did lower her voice.
"I thought you sold your commission. You are no longer a soldier. Is it possible you are here because you want to be here, not out of duty? Perhaps you are coming to care for the children, too."
He laughed, a bitter laugh that made her shiver.
"If you mean, do I pity them? You have it correct. I pity them and every bastard ever born."
She stiffened. Why must he behave this way? Why could he not see that the circumstances of his birth did not define him? "Then go home. I don't want your misplaced sense of honour."
His fists clenched and his jaw tightened. If he'd been another man, she might have been frightened, but she knew he would never hurt her.
"I will not leave you until you do,"
he said through clenched teeth.
Then at least sleep.
Go back to bed.
Why won't you sleep?
Good God, woman, you are every bit as stubborn as they say. She put her hands on her hips.
I prefer the term persistent. She bit her lip. Is it slag? Is that why you won't sleep? You think he will come here tonight?
He closed his eyes as though in surrender. No. His voice sounded weary and ragged. No, it's not slag or the rain or a sense of duty. It's here. He tapped on his head. Here is where the problem lies. You see, my brain box remains firmly entrenched in battle, and I'd rather not wake the whole building with my shouts and screams. Is that answer enough for you? He turned his back on her, staring into the fire. Julia pressed her hands over her mouth.
Oh, Mr. Raxel.
She reached for him, to do what she was not certain, but he moved out of her reach. I don't want your pity. One hand went to the back of his neck. God, but I need a drink. I'm too damn sober, and everything is too damn sharp and clear.
I might have some wine in the kitchen. He held up his hand to stay her flight.
If I want a drink, I can produce it myself. If I can't go a few days without a bottle of Blue Ruin, then I'm a sadder case than even Rafe makes me out to be.
Who is Rafe?
He turned to look at her, seeming almost surprised she was still in the room. Go to bed, Lady Juliana, before I say or do something else I regret.
You've done nothing to regret, Mr. Axel. I'm glad you confided in me. If you have nightmares, why not try some warm milk? My governess used to...
The look he gave her made her close her mouth. Do you think these are the stuff warm milk will cure? These aren't mere whimsy. I relive battles and ambushes and slaughter in my dreams. My mind doesn't conjure these horrors. The blood and the carnage were quite real.
And you wake screaming?
She asked, her voice barely more than a whisper. I'm not the ideal house guest.
Certainly you don't have these dreams every night.
No, but I'd rather not risk it tonight. Julia stepped back, startled at his abrupt answer.
Why?
He turned his back on her. Go to bed, my lady. She almost marched out of her room and back to her own chamber. Let him stay awake all night. He deserved his exhaustion if this was how he showed gratitude. But she didn't leave. Her feet stayed rooted in place, her hands clenched tightly at her sides. Of course you won't go, he said. I would have had more success if I'd asked you to stay. He glanced at her over his shoulder. She lifted her chin, refusing to back down.
If you don't want to sleep, that is fine, but I will stay and keep you company. It's the least I can do when...
She broke off. He rounded on her. When I am the only thing keeping Slag from coming in here and doing whatever the hell he likes to you.
I don't want to talk about him tonight.
We are both speaking of things we would rather not, it seems. He stalked toward her, forcing her to back up until she was flush against the wall beside the door. But understand this. I will never allow Slag to touch you. Never. I will do whatever is necessary to protect you from him, from your soft heart, and even from me.
You?
She breathed. She could barely say the words. Her heart pounded and her lungs struggled to take in air. He was so close, his eyes so blue, his body so large and so warm and so close. Yes, me. At the moment, I have a tenuous hold on my control at best. Leave before I do something we will both regret, the very thing we both wanted in the carriage.
What is that?
She asked, her breath catching in her throat. His eyes blazed, and she realized she had challenged him yet again. Before she could take the words back or even flee the room, Raxel put both hands on the wall behind her, effectively pinning her in. Taking another step closer, his body pressed against hers with a delicious warmth that made her realize exactly how cold she'd been before he touched her. I have wanted to kiss you since the first time I saw you. His finger traced her cheek. You had flower here. He trailed to her chin, the pad of his finger burning a path along her skin. Porridge here.
He looked down, his finger flitting down her neck with a slowness that made her tremble.
And your dress?
Julia closed her eyes. She was so warm that if he touched her body she feared she might spark and flare like a newly lit candle, but his hand stopped at the V of her robe.
I looked a mess, she whispered.
You looked irresistible.
His mouth lowered toward hers, and she knew he would kiss her. She'd been kissed before, and she could easily avoid this kiss by turning her head and offering her cheek instead. Raxel gave her plenty of time to avoid the kiss, taking his time and making his intention clear. Julia knew she should turn her head. Better yet, she should shove him back and chastise him for daring to take such liberties. That was exactly what she had planned to do if a man ever attempted to kiss her again. But for some reason, she could not turn her head. She could not make her legs run away. She could do nothing but look into his bluer-than-blue eyes and hold her breath. When his mouth finally met hers, it was with a soft, tentative brush. Oh, there would be no denying she had known his intentions or not wanted his kisses. He gave her every opportunity to refuse.
"Slag will never touch you like this," he murmured.
"No,"
she agreed. Her lips tingled as he swept his mouth over hers, then pressed more firmly. One of his hands slid down the wall and came to rest on her waist. He made a sound, low in his throat, as his hand touched the silky material of her robe, and then he cupped her and pulled her flush against him.
"Or like this?"
Julia gasped as her body pressed against his hard lines. She had known he was not a man who'd spent his life in idleness, but now she could feel the evidence of his exertions in every hard ridge and plane of his muscled torso. His mouth teased hers as he explored her lips with his. He sucked and nipped, and finally his tongue slid among the seam of her lips, coaxing them open. Julia tried to pull back. She had been kissed, but this was more than kissing. This was far too intimate.
"Kiss me back,"
he murmured, his warm breath tickling her cheek.
"Show me what you like, what Slag will never taste."
She didn't know what she liked. No man had ever asked, and she'd not thought it mattered. She did like the press of his lips on hers, not rough and demanding, but coaxing. His question both thrilled and terrified her.
"I don't know," she whispered.
"Then let me show you what I have been wanting to do for 2 days."
"I shouldn't."
"No, you shouldn't."
His voice was black velvet, caressing her as surely as the hand on her lower back made soothing circles, branding her through the thin layers of her robe and night rail.
"You really shouldn't."
And that was all it took. Her father had always called her obstinate and headstrong, in part because her first reaction when someone told her no was to raise her chin and do whatever it was she'd been ordered not to do anyway. She might be 23 now, no longer a child, but she still could not abide being told what she should and should not do. Something defiant and rebellious took her over when she heard those words. Instead of doing what she had planned, pushing him away, she brought her hand up from where she'd clenched it at her side and fisted it in the hair at the nape of his neck. His hair was surprisingly soft and silky, and she twined it around one finger, pulling his head down and closer to hers. Then she kissed him back. First she simply pressed her lips to his. He made no objection, though she'd felt him stiffen slightly, as though in surprise. He didn't even move to kiss her back. He made no move at all, except that after her lips joined his and they stood there, joined, his hand curled against her back. The pleasure of that simple movement rushed through her, and she wanted more. She wanted to be closer to him. She wanted both his arms around her, holding her, touching her. Her mouth moved against his and then parted slowly. He seemed to hold his breath until she screwed up her courage and touched his lips with the tip of her tongue. And then everything seemed to happen far too quickly. 10. Neil had held himself so still and so tightly he was all but vibrating. When the woman had slid her hand into his hair, tickling the back of his neck, he had almost pounced on her. And then, when she'd kissed him, he'd wanted to devour her. He'd held himself in check, not wanting to scare her, until she darted that small pink tongue out and slicked it against him. That was when he lost all control. No man could have controlled himself under those circumstances and with that sort of temptation. He held her ripe body in his arms, nothing but thin layers of silk and lace, and God, he knew what that lace looked like between them. She was soft and warm, and she smelled sweet and clean. Perhaps if he buried himself in her, he'd forget the stench of cannon smoke and burning flesh. He lifted her off her feet and pressed her hard against the wall as his mouth came down to claim hers. He'd been playing with her before, giving her a chance to flee, giving her a taste of danger. But he was through with games. He took her mouth as a parched man takes his first sips of honeyed water. His mouth all but invaded hers, not softly or lovingly, but with a need that was almost more than Neil could control. How long since he'd felt such a need for a woman? Had he ever felt this ferocity of need? He slanted his lips over hers, invading her mouth with his tongue. He'd been half afraid she'd fight him, but her tongue lashed his right back. Her lips met his with an ardor that mirrored his own. Her grip on his hair was so tight it hurt, but he welcomed the pain. It kept him centered, kept him from losing himself completely. He might want her with a fierceness for which she had no compare, but he still had his limits. He was no slag. He would not take her. If she was a virgin, he would not be the one to rob her of her innocence. Their mouths met again and again, and Neil could not seem to have his fill of her. He was a man who had perfected the art of kissing. For most men, it was an appetizer, but for him it had often served as the main course. He knew how to tease and tantalize with his mouth and his tongue, but he could not seem to control his movements. He could think nothing of skill or giving pleasure. He could only take and take and take from those sweet, supple lips. He tried to slow the kiss, to draw it out, to pull away from her lips so he might kiss her throat or the hollow behind her ear. No matter how he tried, he could not make himself leave her lips. He told himself, "One more kiss, one more kiss," a dozen times, and still his mouth sought hers. Finally, she was the one who pulled away. His vision was blurry, but he could see the color high in her cheeks and the way her breath hitched in her throat. Slowly, he became aware that he'd forced her into the position of wrapping her legs about his waist so she might keep from falling. His erection was cradled between them, and though he had no intention of freeing his cock from his trousers, if he had, he would have easily been able to thrust into her. He looked down at their joined bodies and immediately wished he hadn't. Her robe had fallen open, and the lace across the bodice of her night rail concealed very little. Her pale breast spilled from the lace, the pink nipples pressing their hard tips against the intricate pattern. "I can't breathe," she whispered. "I can't think." Neither could he, but he couldn't seem to find the words, nor could he drag his gaze from the lovely expanse of flesh where her robe had opened.
"Put me down," she ordered.
Neil gritted his teeth, but he obeyed both out of respect and out of habit. He forced himself to step back and to separate his body from hers. It proved harder than he'd expected. Far from feeling sated after touching her, kissing her, and feeling her skin beneath his fingers, he only wanted more of her. Lady Juliana slid toward the door, and Neil took another step back, proving he would not snatch her back into his embrace.
"I didn't think my touch so distasteful to you, my lady," he said, as she all but stumbled over her feet to move out of his reach.
"It wasn't distasteful at all."
She pulled the edges of her robe together, covering herself. Neil felt the loss of the sight of those perfect breasts acutely.
"That's the problem."
"It is a problem," Neil agreed.
"It cannot happen again."
She kept her hand at her throat, clutching her robe as though it might shield her from her attraction to him. and that was what it was. He knew what he'd felt when he'd kissed her, what he'd felt when she had kissed him. She was attracted to him and desired him as much as he wanted her.
How do you think to prevent it? There's obviously some sort of... He gestured to the space separating them.
Pull between us. She straightened her shoulders.
Well...